It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
Socialization of transportation, education, energy, housing, and water. What it means is that government controls it through rules and regulations.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
Under this guise of bipartisanship and nonpartisanship, it's actually tapped down the truth.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
On an equal field in the battle of ideas, mistruths or misconceptions, and it is getting us into a world of hurt.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed, and welcome to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson, and I so appreciate each and every one of you joining us. Thank you for listening. You're each treasured and valued. You have purpose. Live with intention. Take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. And thank you to this great team that I get to work with. That is producer Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, Charlie, and all the people here at Crawford Broadcasting. Happy federal holiday, Independence Day, the day that we're recognizing that, since Independence Day was on Sunday. Happy Independence Day, Steve.
Not a whole lot of sleep last night. But I expected it. I fully expected it.
Well, you know, the founders did say that it should be celebrated with all kinds of fireworks and all kinds of fanfare, and I guess that does contribute to not a lot of sleep sometimes.
But our friend Ben Martin, who always loves to define the difference between freedom and liberty, might have something to say here.
You mean the difference that liberty is the responsible exercise of freedom, so you're thinking that maybe lighting off fireworks late into the evening is not a responsible exercise of freedom?
You got that right. And, you know, I mean, thankfully there's been lots of rain lately, so there's, you know, not the fire threat, but the noise past midnight? Come on.
Well, once a year. And I do love Independence Day and our founding. And a great show planned for you today. We're going to be talking with Bill Fetter. He is the creator of American Minute, and it's going to be a great conversation again about our founding. And I'm sure I'm going to learn something, Steve.
Fetterer, yeah, I've told you last week about my exposure to him doing a show here earlier, you know, several years back. Not only does he have such a firm grip on American history, but world history too. And that's going to become apparent later on when we get to
talking
with him.
I'm sure it will be. And be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. And you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. And I thank each and every one of you for contributing and supporting our independent voice as we look at these issues, this freedom versus force, force versus freedom. If something is a good idea, you should not have to force people to do that. And it's never compassionate to take other people's rights or their property, their freedom, or their livelihood via force, whether with a weapon. We see now policy, unpredictable and excessive taxation, fear, coercion, or the latest silent thief, and that is government-induced inflation. And if something is a good idea, you should not have to force people to do this, to do something, to implement it. And let's jump over here, Steve, to our quote for today. And I thought it was very appropriate to go to our Declaration of Independence. And this is the beginning of the second paragraph. It says, "When in the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and nature's God entitle them. A decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation." And they say, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed." You take a look at just those words there. And on those words, they built this idea for a country. It is totally remarkable, Steve.
Every time I read that and, you know, take it in, you know, the consent of the governed, I'm sorry, I messed that up. But, I'd like to just capture those words and send it to every politician at any level.
And bureaucrat as well. And we are seeing such an assault on that idea of America's founding these days. And we have a responsibility, my friends, to step into this, to step into, it's our time in history now, to protect this idea. And blood and treasure was spent to give us our liberty. And we look at, throughout our history, Americans have stepped into history to stand against evil and tyranny, those that want to control others. And as we look at 2021 America right now, we have seen the use of fear through the, I call it the scamdemic. COVID-19, the Wuhan virus, is a real thing, and we understand that. But when you look at how these PBIs, these politicians and bureaucrats and interested parties, used fear to isolate people, to basically lock people in their homes, that is totally antithetical to the American idea. When we first realized that it was here, it did seem prudent to take a pause to try to get our bearings on what was happening. But as we are now looking back, the truth is coming out that this, in fact, looks like this was a virus that was created in the lab in Wuhan, and we're connecting the dots that there were Americans that were funding this. And so they used that fear. And then this coercion that they're using now for businesses that are basically say that you can, that it's more favorable if you coerce and kind of force your customers to now get the vaccination, which it's not a vaccination. It is still an experimental drug that's not been approved by the FDA. And then also in printing all of this money and giving people, quote unquote, free money. It's not free money. It is money that is basically we are borrowing from our kids and our grandkids. But there's also this silent thief that this printing of money does. And that really is affecting people that are retired now. And that is the silent thief of inflation, government-induced inflation. As Jay Davidson said, there's two kinds of inflation. There's a good kind of inflation. That's because the economy is growing and people have more money and they're trading more money for goods and services and the things that they want may go up in price because there's such a demand for that. That is a good kind of inflation. What we have going on right now is government-induced inflation. A prime example is look at the gas pump. Your gas prices are up 60% to 75%. Why? One of the first things that happened when Joe Biden was inaugurated, this Harris-Biden-Obama-Rice administration, was he stopped the Keystone Pipeline. And then also they taken away the permits to drill on public lands, closing down the Arctic refuge for drilling. And you are seeing it, my friends, at the gas pump, energy prices to cool your homes, to heat your homes. And this is government-induced inflation, and it is very wrong, Steve.
If you didn't laugh, you would cry. Last week, Biden crowing about the fact that he's reduced the cost of your 4th of July celebration by 16 cents. And I'm thinking, okay, Joe, if you stay home, yeah, okay. But if I had to drive to that barbecue, I've just wiped out your 16 cents.
You know what? I missed that. What did he say?
Oh, he's trying to pull down his administration and the things they're doing have reduced the cost of the your 4th of July celebration by 16 cents.
Did he say how?
Well, I don't know. People have pounced on it immediately and said, wait a minute, you can't make a comparison to last year when everything was shut down. But anyway, it was innocuous. It was stupid.
Yeah, 16 cents. Yeah, that doesn't even make a dent into a gallon of gas on what it costs. So we can see that we are at a time right now in 2021 America. That's why the discussion that we're going to have with Bill Federer today and just about our founding, we're going to be talking about the great American idea. It's going to be a very, very important conversation. And I'm sure that I'm going to learn something. Steve, I know you always learn something when we talk with Bill Federer, and I can't wait to get to that conversation for sure.
you can't help but learn when you listen to Bill Federer. So
stay tuned. We're going to have we're going to do three segments with him. And before we go to break, though, I get to work with a number of great partners. As you know, we are an independent voice as we search for truth and clarity on these issues. And some of my great partners sponsor both the shows, and one of those is Hooters Restaurants. They have five locations. That is Loveland, Westminster, Aurora, Lone Tree, and Colorado Springs. And as you get together with friends, just pick up some of their great wings to go and bring them home. Or certainly you can watch great sports over at the Hooters Restaurants. But check out my website. That's Kim Munson, MUNSON.com. And click on the sponsors tab, and you'll get all the specials there for Hooters Restaurants. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll be talking with Bill Federer.
With the federal government printing money, it looks like inflation is on the horizon. That is why you should lock in a low rate now on your mortgage. Lauren Levy with Polygon Financial Group is here to help. Lauren works with a variety of lenders to assist you in finding the mortgage that is just right for you. Locking in a low rate now will save you thousands of dollars over the life of your loan. Don't procrastinate. Don't wait any longer. Call Lauren today at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881.
From the lakes of Minnesota to the hills of Tennessee, across the plains of Texas, from sea to shining sea.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. Be sure and check out our website. That is kimmunson.com, MUNSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. And thank you to each and every one of you who contribute to keep our independent voice on the air as we search for truth and clarity by looking at the issues as freedom versus force, force versus freedom. We have a very special show planned for you today. July 5th of this week is the federal holiday recognizing our Independence Day. And our guest is Bill Federer. You know him. He is a nationally known speaker, best-selling author, and president of Amerisearch, a publishing company dedicated to researching America's noble heritage. The American Minute radio features broadcast daily across America, right here on Crawford broadcasting stations and by the internet. His Faith and History television airs on the TCT network on stations across America via DirecTV. And that website is AmericanMinute.com. Be sure and check that out. Bill Federer, welcome to the show.
Kim, great to be with you.
Our Independence Day this year, 2021, is very important. And we've been talking about the American idea. You are really an authority. When you go to AmericanMinute.com and you look at the books that you have written regarding our heritage, it is so important, and you bring it alive with these conversations. Let's talk about this American idea. It is so unique throughout history. Where do you want to start, Bill?
Right. Well, you know, if we zoom out like in an airplane and take a big look at history, we see that America truly is unique. One of the books I wrote, Who is the King in America? I did the project of researching every civilization that has ever existed on planet Earth. It took a couple years. I went back to the beginning of the invention of writing, Sumerian cuneiform on clay tablets in the Mesopotamian Valley, invented around 3300 BC. I mean, even Neil deGrasse Tyson, the astrophysicist in his Cosmos TV series, was stood there in the Middle East and they're filming, and he says, it was here between the Tigris and Euphrates rivers around 5,000 years ago that we learned how to write. And so 5,000 years ago, right, we're 2080 and so forth, and that's 3,000. It'd be around 3,000 BC. And so everything that we've ever read about anything that happened on Earth has happened within that period as far as human beings writing down human records. And so if we look at these records, what do they show? They show 2,000 years of Egyptian pharaohs, kings of Assyria, kings of Persia, kings of Babylon, Indian Maharajas, Chinese emperors for 5,000 years, and Persia's then conquered by Alexander the Great. And as the centuries go on, these kingdoms get bigger, because with new military advancements, the bully, the dictator, can kill more people. So instead of killing with a rock, like Cain killed Abel, they can kill with a bronze weapon or an iron weapon or a big, long, phalanx spear that the Greeks had or a scimitar sword that the Muslims had or gunpowder that the Chinese invented. The weapon improves, but it's that same fallen nature of a bully on a playground. It's just magnified. And then with technological advancements, the dictator can track more people. I mean, Augustus Caesar, 25 BC, wanted to have a worldwide tracking system. He called it a census. He wanted everybody to go back, and so he could count everybody that's under his thumb, right? And eventually it was one of those censuses that caused Mary and Joseph to have to go to Bethlehem to be counted. And, but it's this idea that as technology grows, dictators can track more people, and with their advanced weapons, they can kill more people. And this was the norm. And so we had Alexander the Great, and then we had, Julius Caesar, Augustus Caesar, and then you had Attila the Hun in the 400s come through, and he had an army of 500,000 people and wiped out cities across Europe. And then you had the Vikings, and then you had Islam. They conquered from the Persian Gulf to the Atlantic Ocean with their sultans, and then Genghis Khan in the 1200s conquers from Korea to Hungary, kills 30 million people. But it was the largest contiguous, which means land-connected empire in world history. Then you had the maritime empires, Portuguese, Spanish, son of the Spanish Empire, right? The Philippines are named after King Philip of Spain. And then the French Empire, everything west of the Appalachians belonged to King Louis XIV of France. But finally, the British Empire became the biggest empire that planet Earth had ever seen. The King of England was a globalist. He was a one-world government guy with him at the top. And he appointed all the judges, right? And so America's founders broke away and flipped it and made the people the king. So kings have subjects who are subjected to the king's will. Democracies and republics have citizens. The word citizen is Greek. It means co-king. You're a citizen of America. You're a co-king of America.
Wow.
It's a polarity change in the flow of power. Instead of top down, it's bottom up. Instead of a dead pyramid rule top down, it's bottom up like a living tree where every root and every little tiny capillary root helps suck in nutrients to keep this tree alive. Every citizen is needed to participate to keep this bottom-up form of government alive. And then, if you'd like, I can share where our founders got these ideas.
Absolutely, Bill. This is just, it's riveting. So please do.
So really, we trace our form of government to New England. Virginia was founded first, 1607, but it was a king-run colony with a royal governor. But what happened in the New England colonies of Massachusetts, Connecticut, New Hampshire, Rhode Island, they were founded by pastors. And these were Congregationalist pastors, which after the Reformation, they did a sort of a change in church government. Instead of hierarchical, where you have it, through cardinals and bishops and so forth, theirs was a congregational model, and it, came from the Greek word ekklesia or ekklesia, which means a calling out. So in Athens, they had 6,000 citizens, and they would call them out of their homes to the marketplace to decide what's going to happen in the city and who's going to take care of what. And Jesus, when he said, upon this rock I'll build my church, he used that word ecclesia. That's this word where everybody's supposed to be a part. He that's faithful in the very little gets entrusted with more. The pastor's job is to teach him how to have a relationship with God and how God moved in the past. He's going to be consistent and it's going to do something similar in the future so you don't get off into crazy stuff. But this idea was everybody in the congregation is somehow involved. That was the model of the churches that were, Roger Williams that founded Providence, Rhode Island and the First Baptist Church in America and Thomas Hooker who founded Hartford, Connecticut and the Congregationalist Church in America. This was this model. They simply took their church government and made it their community government. So the word politics comes from the Greek word polis, which means city. Metropolis, Annapolis, Indianapolis, Minneapolis, polis means city. And politics is the business of the city. And all there was in the city of Hartford were the church members of Thomas Hooker's Congregationalist Church. All there was in Providence, Rhode Island, were the church members. So that they had to be involved in the business of the city.
Now, but Bill, I wanted to just interject. I appreciate you explaining what politics, the real definition, because I've heard that politics comes from poly, which means many, and tix, which is a blood-sucking insect. So I'm glad that you clarified that for us.
I love that. So they would have these town hall meetings in their church building. Usually in the choir loft. I mean, why build a whole brand new building just to talk about a different subject? And they got these ideas. Matter of fact, it was so prevalent in New England that when the revolution started, Britain sent over a military governor named Thomas Gage. And he was bothered by these things called town hall meetings. It was like, we don't need people to meet together and make resolutions. You just do what the king's administrator tells you to do. And so this idea, the examination is, where did these pastors get their ideas? From the Bible, but what part of the Bible? This is interesting. They got it from the first 400 years when Israel came out of Egypt, before they got King Saul. So the king of England, right, he liked to quote from the Bible, but he started with the King Saul and on period, with where there's an anointed king. The Puritans and Congregationalists, they looked to the pre-King Saul period, when it was the assembly of the Israelites, and they went for 400 years with no king. And you examine this, it's called the Hebrew Republic, and it was studied by all these different mostly Protestant reformers. So Martin Luther starts the Reformation 1517. The Age of Enlightenment starts in the early 1600s. This entire century, the scholars are called Christian Hebraists. They're Christians, but they're studying this Hebrew Republic. And this was a phenomenal work. So John Harbor that started, gave them a library for Harvard University. He was a Christian Hebraist. And so they taught Hebrew at Harvard. I mean, why would you teach a dead language there? They really were into the Hebrew Republic. They taught to this day, the coat of arms for Yale University has Hebrew characters on it.
Don't tell them, or they're going to try to cancel it.
So the idea, you look back at this first 400-year period, where since there's no king, there's no royal family to butter up next to. And the law, the Hebrew law, specifically said there is no respect of persons in judgment. Rich or poor, everyone's the same. Male, female, made in the image of the Creator. This is the beginning of the concept of equality. Because wherever there's a king, if you're friends with the king, you're more equal. If you're not friends with the king, you're less equal. And if you're an enemy of the king, you're dead. It's called treason, or you're a slave. Mm-hmm. And so this was the norm. For human government, this power concentrating, you put some junior high girls together in a clique, and one of them is the diva. If you're her friend, you're on the inside of the clique, and if you're not, you're ostracized and they can be real mean to you. There's a bully on the playground. If you're his friend, you're on the inside of a gang leader, and in the woods you call him an Indian chief, right? Mm-hmm. But all a king is a glorified gang leader. And so when ancient Israel comes out of Egypt around 1400 BC, and for 400 years they don't have a king, it's the first instance of private land ownership. You think, really? They didn't own land before? You did, but it was always conditional of you staying on the nice side of the king. You cross the king, he will take away your land and kill you. In Israel, there was no king, and the land was permanently titled to each family. If you own land, you can accumulate stuff, and that's called being blessed, and you can be moved upon in your heart to give away some of your stuff. That is called charity, and you want to give it away. There was no welfare system. In Egypt, their welfare system was, there's a famine, You go to the government says, we'll give you a bag of grain, but it's in exchange for your cattle, in exchange for your land, in exchange for your children, in exchange for your lives. The government always wants to give you something in exchange for your freedoms. Hmm. In ancient Israel, when someone harvested their field, the law says they were to leave the gleanings, the corners of the field, for the poor people to pick through. So this way, the poor were taken care of on a cellular level, so to speak.
Bill, I'd like to make a point on that, because in leaving that for gleaning, it didn't mean that they just harvested it and gave it. It actually meant that there was some effort that people had to work to glean that. And I think that is very important. People that are able, even if they're poor, I think there's a dignity in working. I think I've always thought that that was a very important point to make about the gleaning.
Oh, it's very important. And that concept was integral in the Jewish mindset, because they knew if you just received something without doing anything, it hurt your self-esteem.
Oh.
And you began to feel an inferiority complex, and then you wanted to channel that negative feeling somewhere. You channel it toward the very government that's giving you the free stuff.
Okay.
They end up hating the very government that gives them free stuff. It's a strange human dynamic, but it's there.
It is. Hey, Bill, this is so fascinating, but let's go to break. I'm talking with Bill Federer. He is the author of many books, and his website is AmericanMinute.com. We're talking about the big idea of the American idea. Stay tuned. You won't want to miss it. We'll be right back.
Home ownership and private property rights help you build wealth for you and your family. RE/MAX Alliance award-winning realtor Karen Levine understands this. Supply is super tight right now. This is why you need a seasoned professional with excellent negotiating skills on your side of the table, whether buying or selling an existing home or buying a new build. As a member of the National Association of Realtors Board of Directors, Karen Levine volunteers hours of her time to help you build your American dream. Call her today at 303-877-7516. Again, that's 303-877-7516.
And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that right to
Welcome back
me.
To the Kim Munson Show. What a special day this is, celebrating our independence. And this is the federal holiday for Independence Day, but it is so important in 2021 America. Our guest today is Bill Federer. He's a nationally known speaker, best-selling author, and president of Amerisearch, a publishing company dedicated to researching America's noble heritage. Bill's American Minute radio features broadcast daily across America. It's here on Crawford Broadcasting Stations, and you can get it via the internet as well. His Faith in History television show airs on the TCT network on stations across America via DirecTV. Be sure and check out his website, AmericanMinute.com. He is an author, and there is a vast amount of books there that are so important. I have a number of them. Bill Federer, the conversation is so important. We're talking about the American idea, and you're giving the history of how we get to America. And we were talking about the Hebrews, the Israelites, and before we went to break, about gleaning. And you made an important point there, and that is really the dignity of work. Now, there are people that need help. And in America, charity has always been how we have helped people that were at a point where they could not take care of themselves. But if a man or woman is able to just give them something, I think makes them pets instead of individuals. There's this dignity in working. And the Hebrews had this in gleaning, leaving a portion, the corners of a field where people that needed to eat could go in and glean that. And I just think that's such an important point to make, the dignity of work, the dignity of taking care of yourself. So where do you want to take it from here, Bill?
Yeah, well, it's interesting when you look at the list of things that the colonial New England people drew from ancient Israel. Now, one of the things I found interesting, so the U.S. Constitution was written, but it needed to be ratified by nine states, rather, to go into effect. They had eight. New Hampshire was in line to be the ninth, but they were having a deadlock. And so Harvard President Samuel Langdon gives an address to the New Hampshire Ratifying Convention in 1788. The title of his address is The Republic of the Israelites, an Example to the American States. He says, instead of the 12 tribes of Israel, we may substitute the 13 states of the American Union and see this application plainly, that as God in the course of his kind providence hath given you an excellent constitution of government founded on the most rational, equitable, and liberal principles by which liberty is secured, you know, and he talks about empowering the morals and so forth. But he says the Israelites may be considered as a pattern to the world in all ages of government on Republican principles. After his address, the New Hampshire delegates vote. They ratify the U.S. Constitution.
Wow.
They are the ninth state to do that, and our U.S. Constitution went into effect. Our U.S. Constitution went into effect after the sermon, The Republic of the Israelites, an Example to the American States. In his address, Samuel Langford says, from abject slavery, a mere mob, to a well-regulated nation under laws far superior to what any other nation could boast. Think of it. Here's ancient Israel. They're slaves for 400 years. They cannot even read. Only 1% of Egypt could read. Reading and writing was the scribes' secret knowledge. They had 3,000 hieroglyphs. They kept them complicated on purpose as job security. And you know, kids would start at a young age to learn all the secrets, symbols, and so forth. But when Moses comes down the mountain, he does not just have the law. He has the law in a simple 22-character alphabet. First letter's Aleph, second letter Beth. It is so easy to learn. Kids could learn it. No longer is reading and writing the secret knowledge of this deep state ruling class where the insiders know what's going on, but nobody else does. Everybody in ancient Israel could read. It's the first instance of a completely literate population. So not only did they have the law, they could read the law. Not only were they independent and free from the Pharaoh, they could maintain their independence. And so we see these. And so in ancient Israel, every citizen was taught the law. I was trying to explain this. Imagine power. Government power as a line, as a spectrum. One side is total government, the other side is no government. Total government power concentrates like a black hole more and more and more till it's ultimately in the hands of a dictator, a pharaoh, a Caesar, a Kaiser, a Sultan, Tsar, and they rule through fear. That's the motivating power, what Montesquieu, the French political philosopher, says. Dictators rule through fear. The other side of the spectrum would be no government. Well, no government, that would be anarchy. Unless each citizen was taught the law. And that's what happened in ancient Israel's case. And I thought of a way of explaining it. Imagine a behavioral app for your iPhone. You know, we all have a GPS app where you can, you know, it tells you where to turn 50 yards ahead, turn left, right? Imagine a behavioral app, and it tells you how to behave in real time, right? It's monitoring your heart rate. It sees you're about to lose temper at somebody, and it'll say, alert, alert, don't lose your temper, right? Or it's GPS, and it has cameras that can see that you're eyeing something on the table, and you're thinking of stealing it, and it'll say, alert, alert, don't. Imagine a behavioral app. That's what the law is, right? And then the Levites were the computer geeks that helped you to download the app. Line upon line, precept upon precept. You go to, you know, Apple Store, Google Play, press here, press here. And so everybody in ancient Israel had downloaded this app, and they were individually taught the law, and they had it memorized in their heart. But the big question is, why would you follow it? What would motivate you to follow an internal moral? Ancient Israel had the key ingredient. There is a God who is watching everyone. He wants you to be fair, and he's going to hold you accountable in the future. So you're about to steal something. Nobody's around. You know you can get away with it. And then you think, God's watching me. He wants me to be fair. He's going to hold me accountable in the future. Maybe I should hesitate stealing. And it creates something in your head called a conscience. If everybody in the country really, truly believes this, you can maintain complete order with no police, maximum liberty. Women can go anywhere without fear. You don't have to lock your doors, right? And so this was the model that ancient Israel had that America's colonial pastors looked at for the model of how they were going to set up New England, and eventually that inspired our Constitution. there's like several other things, if you want, I can go through it, of these examples.
Yeah, let's do that.
So ancient Israel was the first nation with private gun ownership. You see, wherever there's a king, the king has an army to enforce his will. In ancient Israel, there was no king for those first 400 years, and every man was in the militia and armed with a sword upon their thigh, and they were ready at a moment's notice to defend their family and their community. And so this is what the colonial New England pastors set up as Minutemen, right? They're farmers, they're working, but at a minute's notice, they can grab their musket and, you know, be there ready to fight. Ancient Israel had no police. Everyone was taught the law. Everyone helped enforce the law. It was like everybody was deputized. Ancient Israel was where they had no prisons. In ancient Egypt, where Joseph was in prison for several years, in Israel, when a crime was committed, you got the elders of the city together at the gates. They bring the accused, and they had the trial immediately. And in capital cases, there's a city of refuge that you could run away to await a trial. These were all aspects to a bottom-up form of government. And then they got to choose their own leader. So every town had a meeting place, and the Hebrew word for meeting place was synagogue. And at the synagogue, they were taught the law by the rabbi, but they were also is where they chose their leaders. And this goes back to Moses. They got 3 million people. They're in the desert. And he says, how can I bear your burden alone? Take you, wise men, and understanding, and known among your tribes, and bring them to me, and I'll make them rulers over you. It was an election process within the tribe, known among your tribe. So you know people that hate covetousness, and they'll refuse a bribe or whatever. And so they pushed this person forward, said, Moses, here's our man. And so this became every single town and village would have their meeting place, their synagogue, and they knew the people that were, you know, trustworthy and honest and everything, and they would elect them to be their city elders. And then the city elders would send representatives to a tribal meeting. Then the tribes would send representatives to the Sanhedrin, the 70 elders, so to speak. And for 400 years, it was a bottom-up form of government. This all switched with King Saul. And so when the priests stopped teaching the law, you think the priest did? Yeah, well, here's Eli, the high priest in ancient Israel. His own sons are sleeping with women in the very tent where the Ark of the Covenant is. Could you imagine that?
Wow.
And then there's another Levite with a concubine. And the law says the Levite's to marry a virgin of his own tribe. Here he is with a woman he's not even married to, so he's not following the law. And the poor girl gets raped and he gets killed. And then another Levite has a silver graven image in the house of a guy named Micah. And this tribe of Dan comes along and takes the graven image and tells this Levite, come along with us and you can be a priest to our whole tribe. And you're scratching your head thinking, what's this Levite doing with a graven image? Isn't that one of the commandments? You're not supposed to have them. So it got to the place where it was chaos, and it says every man did that which was right in their own eyes. Why? Because the priests had stopped teaching what was right in the Lord's eyes. And it turns into this lawlessness and, you know, sodomites banging on doors and girls getting raped. And so they all go to Samuel the prophet, and they say, this self-government system's not working anymore. We want to be like all the pagan countries. We want a king. And Samuel cries, and the Lord tells Samuel, they did not reject you. They rejected me, that I should not reign over them. And so they, God sends lightning and thunder, destroys their crops. And they said, we sinned in asking for a king. And God said, yes, you did, but I'm still going to work my plan of redemption, you know. And so you look at Saul. He ruled as a tyrant. He was pouting that his son Jonathan became friends with David. Mm-hmm. And he turns to his soldiers. He goes, none of you soldiers care about me. And one soldier, Doeg the Edomite, says, King, I'm your friend. I saw David go to this town. The priest gave him some bread, gave him the sword of Goliath that was stored there. Saul says, bring those priests to me. They arrive. He turns to his soldiers and says, kill them. The soldiers hesitate. Doeg the Edomite goes out there and kills them all. What just happened? The soldiers had been operating under the old system, where every individual is accountable to God to follow the law. The law says you need two or more witnesses before you condemn someone to death. There's only one witness, this Doeg guy. And so the soldiers are hesitating. They still have a conscience. It's like, okay, you're telling me to kill, but I'm accountable to God. There's only one witness supposed to be two. They're hesitating. They have a conscience. Doeg says, King, I'm going to surrender my conscience to you. You tell me to kill, I'll kill. You tell me to kill the baby in the womb, I'll kill it. You tell me there's no more male and female. Whatever you tell me, government, I'm just a bunch of mush, right? You're like Nebuchadnezzar blows the trumpet, I'll bow to a statue. I'll do whatever the government tells. And
Bill, and what you have just described to me, as far as you need more than one witness, looks to me like that is the basis in the Constitution of due process here.
Yes, yes, exactly. And, you know, the Proverbs 11, a false balance is an abomination to the Lord. And so the...
You know what?
Let's really study by the colonial founders.
Okay, I guess that's the point to make before we go to break, that the colonial founders really studied this. I know this conversation is going so quickly. We're talking with Bill Fetterer about our American idea. We're going to go to break. When we come back, let's then wrap this into how we get to the Declaration of Independence. And this is Bill Fetterer we're talking with. We'll be right back.
Would you have ever dreamed that freedom of speech, freedom of thought, freedom of assembly, and freedom of religion would be under assault and attack in America? Unbelievably, it is happening right before our eyes. That is why it is important to keep free-thinking, independent voices on the airwaves, the internet, and social media. Kim Munson is one of those important voices. Help her keep independence alive. Go to KimMunson.com to contribute to join Kim in the battle of ideas raging in America today. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
There ain't no doubt I love this land.
This land.
God bless the USA.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter. There you'll get first look at all of our op-eds, our most recent podcasts. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com. And thank you to each and every one of you who contribute to keep our independent voice on the air as we search for truth and clarity by looking at these issues as freedom versus force, force versus freedom. And I get to work with some really great sponsor partners. One of those is Castlegate Knife and Tool. They are located right here in Sedalia, Colorado. They have a beautiful selection and knives from the best blade makers from throughout the world. Check out castlegate.com. That is castlegate.com. Whether or not you're a chef or a sportsman or a collector, Castlegate Knife and Tool is the place for you. On the line with me is Bill Fetterer. He is a nationally known speaker, best-selling author, president of Amerisearch. It's a publishing company dedicated to researching America's noble heritage. And be sure and check out the books. You can find them at AmericanMinute.com, which is also his radio feature. It's broadcast daily across America and right here on KLZ and Crawford Broadcasting Stations. Bill Fetterer, this is an absolutely fascinating conversation about how our American founding is related to the Israelites or Hebrews. Can I use that term for both? What's the case on that, Bill?
So there's 12 tribes of Israel, but in 722 BC, the king of Assyria took the 10 northern tribes captive and scattered them around. So we're not quite sure where they all went. But before they got scattered, King Hezekiah sent out a plea that, hey, anybody in these other tribes come to Jerusalem, and some did. And then Jerusalem and the southern tribe of Judah basically existed for another century. It was captured and taken to Babylon, and then Cyrus of Persia, after 70 years, let some of them go back, and then they rebuilt the second temple and so forth. And so since the tribe of Judah was taken to Babylon back, that's how we began to refer to all of the Israelites as Jews, because of they were predominantly the tribe of Judah.
Okay.
There were other tribes sort of mixed in, but they really went through a lot of careful genealogy trying to do that. But basically, the word Jew comes from the word Judah.
Okay, and Israelite and Hebrew, that is interchangeable, correct?
Pretty much.
Okay.
You're right.
Okay.
I mean, Abraham was a Hebrew, but Israelite is another name for Jacob. So Jacob was the grandson of Abraham.
Okay. Thanks for clarifying that. We have this last segment left. This goes so quickly. I've learned so much. How does this relate to our Declaration of Independence? And tell us a bit about Thomas Jefferson and how that all came down.
Yeah, so the King of England claimed that he was God's lieutenant and that all the rights and powers come from the Creator to him, and then he dispenses it to all these lowly creatures below. So the King of England did not believe everyone was created equal. He believed he was created a little extra special, right? And so when our founders in the Declaration says all men are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, we sort of conveniently leave out the king. So it's Creator to the people. It's not Creator King people. And then all the people are equal, and we choose from amongst ourselves who's going to be our temporary political leader. So it's a bottom-up form of government. And this was world-changing. If it wasn't for the fact that there was a 3,000-mile ocean between us and the King of England, if it wasn't for the fact that Europe was the chessboard that all the kings were fighting over, and the colonial possessions were sort of an afterthought, and to be quite honest, they were a waste of money for the king. It cost all this money for these colonies and nothing came back. You know, it was like, and so that's when the King of England said, look, I'm going to send over a royal governor, but governor, you got to raise your own money. And so in Virginia, the governor gets all the landowners together called burgesses and says, you know, you guys figure out how you're going to cough up some money for me. And so they began to meet and says, who's going to pay what? And they thought, well, while we're meeting, we need somebody to, you know, fix that road and fix that bridge and defend against the Indians and so forth. And it backdoored Virginia into a sort of legislative body. And as long as the royal governor got his money, he really didn't care. But the King of England just didn't want to be bothered by the. So we had 150 years of practicing with training wheels on a bicycle, so to speak, of how to do self-government. And so when we finally did break away, we could last. That's the problem. We go into these other countries, whether it's Iraq, whether it's into Eastern Europe, we get rid of their king, their dictator, and then we say, here's a self-government. And in one generation, it flips to being controlled by the mafia or by Sharia Islam or whatever. And we say, why didn't the Constitution work? It's because the people had not been trained in self-government principles. What self-government principles? Number one, you get rights from a creator, not the government. Number two, the government's job is to protect your God-given rights. And not everybody believes that. In Sharia Islam, they don't believe that everyone's equal. Muslim men are superior to Muslim women. A guy can have four wives, a woman can't have four husbands. And then both of those are superior to kafir infidels. There's no concept of equality in that area. But anyway, and so in America, we take the power of the king, we separate it into the hands of the people. You know, in the few minutes that are left, I did want to highlight one thing that I think is interesting. The abolitionist movement started in America. It didn't start with Islam because Muhammad owned black slaves. It didn't start in India because they have a whole caste of slaves. They're called Dalits, untouchables, and their permanent job is to clean the sewers and take care of the garbage. China has had 5,000 years of emperors. There was no motivation for the emperor to want to raise up all these, you know, slaves and poor people. It was Christianity that gradually got rid of slavery in Europe. But in America, it began with the Quakers. And they came to Pennsylvania, William Penn. 2 years later, they had the Germantown petition, the first document to end slavery. And then you had a Quaker named Anthony Benezet. He petitions, and the Quakers go on record as being officially against slavery. He writes a book on the horrors of the slave trade, and it's read by the Founding Fathers. Patrick Henry reads Anthony Benezet's book, and Patrick Henry says, I can no longer defend slavery. And he pushed to end the importation of slaves into Virginia, and it passed. And Thomas Jefferson read it, and Jefferson pushed through in the first draft of the Declaration of Independence. It got rid of slavery. It lists all these reasons we were rebelling against the king, that he's incited the natives of the frontiers to butcher the inhabitants of our colonies, that he's plundered the seas, that he's made all the judges dependent on his will alone, that he's taxing us without representation. And the last one was that he has imprisoned a people who has never offended him and transported them as slaves, and many of them dying in inexorable commerce, you know. And so Jefferson's first draft would have gotten rid of slavery, but South Carolina and Georgia said no. And because they said the declaration had to be unanimous, and because the British had just invaded New York and everybody in Philadelphia was panicking, they said, look, let's hurry up and just shove through this declaration. We'll worry about the slavery issue later. How we wish they would have ended it right then. But I do want to highlight that Jefferson, when he was president, he did sign the legislation to end the importation of slaves in 1807. And so this movement was sort of like today, more people are becoming pro-life.
Mm-hmm.
And there's, with the advances of science, they're realizing, wait, this little bitty baby in the womb has its own DNA, its own blood type, its own brain waves. It's a brand new person inside of a mother's body. It is not a part of the mother's body. It's a brand new body inside of the mother. And as science advances, more people are becoming pro-life. That's sort of the attitude against slavery. It was a growing movement, and it really got a shot in the arm with the Second Great Awakening revival. In the early 1800s, it was Christians preaching, along with the Quakers. You began to have the Methodists with Charles Wesley condemning slavery, and then other groups, Moravian missionaries condemning slavery and so forth. And then, you know, finally, we got rid of slavery with the Civil War, with Lincoln being a Republican and the Democrats in the Deep South having Jim Crow laws and black codes and so forth. So I tell people it's not a hardware issue, it's a software issue. It's not the color of the skin, it's the thinking in the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And the battle is who gets to put the gospel principles on the minds of these young people. That we need to send, instead of critical race theory into the schools, we need to send evangelists into the schools. Because once people come to Christ and they experience the love of God and forgiveness in their heart, they share that love with others. And Jesus says, whatever you do to the least of these, my brethren, you've done it to me. Do unto others as you would have them doing to you. And so you treat everybody nice because you've been accepted by God, whereas the critical race theory says, well, we want you to treat these people nice because if you don't, you'll get canceled. And so it's this fear motivation. You really don't care about the person. You just don't want to have people cancel you. But this concept is a biblical idea of getting rid of slavery. And here, Jefferson's first draft of the Declaration of Independence would have gotten rid of slavery.
I did not know that, Bill Fetter. We have just about 3 minutes left. And this Declaration of Independence that we are celebrating right now is remarkable. I think it's under attack in 2021 America, but I'm also very hopeful that we need to conserve and preserve and reclaim these words of our founding, that all men are created equal by God with these rights from God of life. And that's just among the rights, is life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, and that government is to preserve those rights. What's the kind of the final big picture you want to leave with our listeners today, Bill Fetter?
The founders paid a price. 11 of the signers of the Declaration of Independence had their homes destroyed. 5 of them were hunted down by the authorities and captured. 17 of them served in the military. 9 actually fought and died in the Revolutionary War. And they were young people. There was 27-year-old George Walton, and he signed the Declaration of Independence, and he was wounded and captured at the Battle of Savannah. Another 27-year-old Edward Rutledge, and 30-year-old Thomas Hayward, and 34-year-old Arthur Middleton. You know, they were made prisoners at the Siege of Charleston. They had signed the Declaration of Independence. 38-year-old Thomas Nelson had his home taken by the British and used as the headquarters. Matter of fact, at Yorktown, he told the guys, the Americans that had surrounded Yorktown, to take their cannons and shoot his house because the British were using it. Many of them lost their fortunes. There was a Carter Braxton lost his fortune. Another Thomas McCain was hunted like a fox. Richard Stockton was dragged from his bed at nighttime and jailed. And there's a 50-year-old Lewis Morris had his home taken and used as barracks. And then Abraham Clark had two. He signed the Declaration. They went after his sons. Two of his sons were captured and put on British starving ships. more Americans died on British starving ships than died in battle, right? So, you know, they'd round them up and put them in prison. Well, there were no prisons. Okay, we'll put them in buildings, and well, they got filled up. Well, they put them on ships in the harbor, and it was freezing cold, and they didn't feed these guys, and smallpox went in there and ravaged them. One was a preacher named Reverend John Witherspoon, and his son was killed at the Battle of Germantown. So, you know, you see the price that they paid, and then you begin to say, well, you know, we need to value these freedoms that we have. And what are the freedoms? You get to be in charge of your life. Hmm. You get to decide where you want to live, who you want to marry, what career you want to pursue. You can switch careers, what church you want to go to or not go to, what clothes you don't have to wear a burqa, what food you want to eat. You can eat pork if you want to. You have basically, you get to be the king of your life, and then all of us together are co-kings of America. It is a bottom-up, individual, empowering form of government. Again, a republic is where the people are king, ruling through representatives. When we pledge allegiance to the flag and to the republic, we're basically pledging allegiance to us being in charge of ourselves. So when somebody protests the flag and turn their back on the flag at Olympics or whatever, what they're saying is, I don't want to be the king anymore. I protest this system where people rule themselves. It's like, really? You don't want them to rule themselves? Well, I'll tell you what will happen. You'll have some big government dictator, deep state, come in, and they'll dictate everything. And then you're back to where we started from, with some pharaoh. And so it's important for us to understand that our form of government, it requires participation, not criticizing it. You get involved and you push and to make the changes from the inside. And it's a present. Our founders were humans. They had faults, but they gave us a present. And that present is, you get to be in charge of your life, and all of us together are in charge of the country.
Wow, Bill Federer, this was absolutely perfect as we are reflecting upon the Declaration of Independence. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Kim.
And the quote for today is the final line of our United States Declaration of Independence. And with the description that Bill just gave of what the founders, what happened to them, or what the signers of the Declaration happened to them, it says, "And for the support of this Declaration, with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor." My friends, today, be grateful. Read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. My friends, you are not alone. God bless you, and God bless America.